Welcome to Office Hours. I'm David Meltzer. We're here live at the SiriusXM studios at the Wynn in Las Vegas. If you haven't felt blessed enough to be with these neighbors of ours at Office Hours, you're about to be blown away. Whether it was John Hennessy or a variant commissioner of the Cornhole League, how can you beat John Semper? He is a part of all the legendary content from history, whether it be the Jetsons or the Smurfs or Fraggle Rock or my favorite, Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. John Semper has an eye for writing, production, and animation like none other. We are blessed to welcome to Office Hours the legend of animation, John Semper. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
I didn't even do you justice, kind of like introducing Forrest Griffin there at the end. I can only do so much.
Yeah, you only have so much time.
When you're choosing today, you know, in a part of your life where you get to choose whether you want to do something or not, which is the blessing of doing so well at a younger age where you may not have been in that position, what are you looking for? With all the people that are coming with all these different projects to you, what are some of the key components that excite you or you see as worth your time and effort and attention?
Well, I've always been drawn to interesting characters and how they relate to the characters around them. So even in the case of Spider-Man, what I told my writers, I was the head writer and I had a staff, and what I told my writers was that we're doing the Peter Parker show. We're not doing the Spider-Man show, because when you think of Spider-Man, you think of the villains and you think of the battles and all of that. But when you think of Peter Parker, and this was one of the things that drew me to him when I was young, is that he's coping with life the way we all cope with life. He's dealing with romances and he's dealing with, working for the boss, the crazy boss, and first year of college. And so for me, those kinds of regular, normal interactions are really the core of good stories. So I'm always looking for good characters. I always ask myself when I'm looking at a character, what is this character afraid of? Because them overcoming their fears, conquering their fears, figuring out their life, that's really where good stories come from. So I'm looking for good characters that have flaws, so that over the course of many episodes, we can kind of work on those flaws and we can fix them. I have my own personal interests, which, you know, I lean toward, sometimes towards sci-fi, sometimes towards film noir. So there are certain genres that appeal to me, fantasy sometimes. So, you know, if I see something and I see the story potential, the potential for telling really strong stories, then I'm in.
Well, you'll like my co-host here, Matt Ebert, because he's the crash champion. And so you dealt with all of these different characters who end up crashing in some way, and then you resolve it with the champion they are.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're
heroes
as excited as I am.
Need. Yeah, that's yeah. That's what we say about ourselves. But yeah. Got a chance to talk to you, John, a little bit ahead of this. And one of the things I had mentioned to you, which I thought was really interesting, was when I look at animation, like over the past 30 years, like, talk about technology making a difference and changing it. Did you embrace that always? Did it all, or did you try to keep it like it was? And how different is it today than when you first did it?
That's a great question. And we were talking about that a little earlier. When I look at the history of animation, I started out actually being very interested in film history. And that was I used to write magazine articles, and animation history is really important to me. Even pre-film history, where they had devices that could make things move. Film, cinema, television, it's always been directly connected to technology. Technology is what makes it possible. And all the great animation giants like Walt Disney and Max and Dave Fleischer, they embraced technology the minute they could get their hands on it. As I mentioned when we were discussing earlier, when Disney realized that instead of having inkers and painters, you could have a Xerox process that could literally take the animation drawings and turn those into cells, animation cells directly, without there being any other hands involved, he embraced it immediately. And that became the standard for a lot of years. So I always feel like animation should always embrace new technologies. And we were talking outside specifically about AI. I know a lot of people are afraid of AI. A lot of people feel that AI is going to hurt them in some way. And definitely things are going to change. But I think that AI is going to conquer animation. Now, I didn't invent AI, and I didn't necessarily want things to change. But the fact that AI has been invented and that I can see where it will have tremendous potential in animation, I think it's going to dominate the animation industry. And there's really no stopping it. So I fully embrace the change.
I'm coming from a different, I'm weird. I like to come from different angles.
I like weird.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, Morris, I'm like, weird is good.
I mean, he's stealing my territory. I thought I was the weird one.
Well, I'll be the little weird one.
All right. Okay. I thought David Goldberg was the weird one.
Yeah. You know, I'm reflecting. So I don't know about everybody else's backstory and journey, but I had a pretty difficult childhood, right? Growing up, and cartoons and many of these animations were things that fed my soul during those times. Mm-hmm. If I'm just being honest, so this is a bit serendipitous for me, right? In today's world, the children are.
Was it because like people like Forrest picked on you?
I mean, probably.
Yeah,
I probably got beat up by Forrest. But in the grand scheme of things, the inner world of the child that's going to be consuming the content has been shifting a lot recently over the last decade, where it used to be like a really wholesome focused kind of what are your fears? What are you scared of? How do you the way I would say it is teaching might like someone like myself how to see myself more clear, right? What are some like really strong boundary markers that when you're telling stories, because obviously with AI, the one thing AI can't do is take human ingenuity and turn it into a story. So now you can take the story, maybe you maximize the animation, but you still tell the same story that can build the heart up. What are like hard line values that you want to make sure make it into your work? And also maybe some value systems or things that you're trying to steer clear of?
Well, it's personal. You know, you have to sort of have your own morality and apply a little bit and be responsible. You have sure. to, you know, I was joking earlier that, you know, I raised you all, because you've all watched.
Not a joke.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
Truth to that.
We appreciate you.
Yeah.
And black and white, even for me.
Yeah. Hey, I remember black and white.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just a second.
Well, I want you to know that I've always taken that seriously. Sometimes even to my detriment, you know, one of the few criticisms that I get on Spider-Man, the animated series, is that he didn't punch people enough.
Mm.
And that had nothing to do with censorship. That had to do with the fact that I didn't believe that I wanted to have a character on screen that would model hitting as a way of resolving conflict.
Mm. Oh.
So that was important to me. But that's personal.
That's
nobody.
Good. No, but that's strong. Though. That's a good one.
Nobody asked me to
do that episode for us.
And I still have people that, you know, kind of get on my case about that. Mm-hmm. You know, I wrote a live action movie, Class Act, which featured the black rap duo Kid and Play. And I put an anti-drug, a very, very light anti-drug message in it. And Rolling Stone particularly singled it out as something that they were disappointed by, that you know, the producers felt the need to stick an anti-drug message. It had nothing to do with the producers. It was me. So I have always been keenly aware of the fact that I am raising kids, and that, you know, because I grew up with cartoons and I know how important cartoons and kids television, you know, was to me. So it's always been in the back of my mind. So I have my own personal boundaries and my own personal feelings about these things. And then, of course, in animation, we have more censorship in animation than any other media. So I just finished doing a show called Weather Hunters, created by Al Roker for PBS. And that show is a teaching show. I don't always do teaching shows. I've done a few in my career. When you're doing a teaching show, you get lots and lots of notes. You get lots and lots of, not censorship, but guidance. You know, there are things you can do and can't do. I work very well within the parameters of what the advisors want me to do. I don't fight up against that because
I know Howard Stern.
Say again?
You're no Howard Stern.
In so many ways, I'm no Howard Stern.
I didn't think so.
But, you know, I think it's a really important thing to pay attention to, the fact that you're raising kids.
How did you get into that aspect of it? Like, how did you get into, like, children's television for the most part, or children's shows?
Yeah. Started with an interest in animation.
Okay.
As a very young kid, I saw a movie called Sleeping Beauty. And it was overwhelming. It was I think, the first widescreen.
I think they've canceled that movie since, but go ahead.
It got censored, right? Because they don't want people sleeping?
Apparently, you're not supposed to kiss unconscious women.
It's or kind drug them. Or I think you can't roofie them. I don't think you can roofie them either.
Yeah, I think this is, yeah. It's
you the, ruined one of my fetishes. that's a whole other story.
Does.
I was overwhelmed by that film as a kid. It came out at the right time in my life. It was a widescreen CinemaScope stereo sound movie. Mm. And the fact that that all came from someone drawing on a piece of paper, that to me was amazing because I liked to draw. So from about age six, I wanted to be a cartoonist. I wanted to make animated cartoons. I'm very dull in that. I started out wanting to make animated cartoons, and here I am still making animated cartoons. You know, so it's been a direct line. When I got out to L.A., because I started doing a little bit of television work, not in animation, but just production work when I was in Boston, Massachusetts, which is where I'm from. And when I got to L.A., I really wanted to get into animation, and it's a long, long, long story, and some of it is you know, me being very direct about it, and other parts of it involved luck. But I soon found myself in the post-production department of Hanna-Barbera, where I sat with all the producers, and we figured out how to fix the cartoons, because when they came over from Korea, which was where the animation was done, there were lots and lots of errors. And so we'd sit there and we'd solve problems. And I'd sit with the network, and I got to know what everyone was looking for. And my mantra in this business is to always be the solution, always be the thing that helps. So I started out helping producers, and then I became a writer because I saw that that was where all the real creative stuff was. I graduated Harvard with a degree in visual and environmental studies, but I don't know
what that is. What is that?
It's a little school in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
No, not Harvard.
He doesn't know what Harvard is in him. Okay, yeah. The visual side, but
you know, I used to do visual stuff. I wanted to draw, and I did want to be an animator for a while. But when I got into the industry in 1980, the animators had no control over anything, and it was all in the hands of the writers. So I became a writer.
Smart.
And fortunately, I've known some good people and made some good friends. And Stan Lee, for instance, was one of them. Mm. And he called me and brought me onto Spider-Man when they were running into trouble with the production. So I've been very lucky. And then I've been blessed with being pretty good at what I do, you know. And so those are the two factors that you have to have, luck and skill, in order to succeed in my business.
Well, I think there's one other characteristic which you teach as well in the content that you create and are also bringing it forward as co-founder of MVP Kids, 4Kids, and Team Robo Builder as well, the new pilot that you have. It's humility. And, you know, I look at bios like these and resumes like these of the people we're blessed to surround ourselves with. And I think about a piece of advice that my mom gave me that I continue to give to my kids, where they roll their eyes at me like I rolled my eyes at my mom. But you show me your friends and I'll show you your future. And you've created friends for so many children that have created this amazing future. And I just feel honored to call you a friend of mine as well. I'm certainly doing things right when we're attracting people like these and John Semper on office hours. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. And it's a delight knowing you, David. And I'm very happy to be here, guys. So thank you.
Blessed to be here on the Miracle Edition of Office Hours.